Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we talk about today's big political trends and issues. My name is Mike Siluma. In today's episode, we discuss the state of the ANC and its future as it's meeting right now at its National General Council in Johannesburg. My guests for today's conversation are Professor Bongani Mulunga, who's Associate Professor in the Department of Politics and International Relations at the University of Johannesburg, UJ. Among his books is the multiple prize-winning book called The Man Who Founded the ANC, a biography of Pixley Gaisaga Seme. Also with us is Professor Susan Boysen, who is a political scientist and author and analyst of South African politics. Professor Boysen has written a trilogy, among other books, of research-driven offerings on the African National Congress, including the one titled Precarious Power, Compliance and Discontent Under Ramaphosa's ANC.
Terrible things are happening in South Africa. The leadership is doing some terrible things.
We will not be bullied.
Like the gold medals to US were not just backers.
The president did want them to say, if you're going to fire, we'll take it as a declaration of war.
I can't be threatened by Zuma. I defeated Zuma.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
We're not sending help to criminals. We're going to smoke them out. They will come out.
There has not been agreement in terms of parties in the executive.
The executive must come here.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
Welcome to the Politics Weekly, to the both of you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Professor Boysen, because you spent, my spies tell me that you spent some time at the NGC.
Observing.
They were observing the NGC. Why should South Africans care about what happens at an ANC-NGC?
Well, the ANC, despite its decline, despite the fact that the ANC is not in terms of national elections an outright majority party anymore, is and remains by far the biggest party, is a predominant party, is a party that's controls or participates in the bulk of government in South Africa. So it is a party in decline, but a party that is far from collapsed and disappeared. And what we know about the ANC and its problems have become in many ways the problems that South Africa grapples with daily. And I think every South African has or should have a big interest in what transpires or does not transpire at a meeting like the National General Council. Things that often should be said are not said, or the silences remain. So we watch out for both changes, welcome changes, essential changes, and also for those big silences.
Often people will say, some people hold the view that the ANC is there to solve the country's problems. And other people say, actually, the ANC is the source of many of the problems.
Indeed, that's a very accurate.
If you look back over 30 years.
Yes, absolutely. If the ANC had handled itself and government differently in the last 30 years, had pushed through essential policies, more transformative policies, much more and much earlier than they belatedly tried to do in small measures, also when the GNU no longer permits them, although one mustn't overrate the constraint that the GNU places on the ANC. If the ANC had done more, we would have more and better. We would have had far fewer problems than we have now. If the ANC had exercised, for example, great discipline over its members, had controlled very closely who was getting into its ranks and rising through its ranks into government, many of the current problems, by recent past problems, state capture, and those are continuous problems as well, and current problems about decay and disarray in state security apparatuses and security systems, in health systems, you name it, then those problems would have been far less and easier to handle. So it is, yes, one of these incredible ironies of our time that we as South Africans generally also must help solve the ANC, help the ANC to solve the problems they have been generating and fostering and refusing to address.
If it allows us to help solve the problems.
I think they're perhaps getting to a point where they haven't got a choice.
Professor Ngulunga, Professor Poison says the ANC is in decline, is a party in decline. Is the decline inevitable, unavoidable, inexorable?
Well, I mean, it is true. I mean, the ANC is a party in decline. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt about that. I mean, you can see that it is in decline in electoral terms. But when you listen quite carefully to what the Secretary General of the ANC says and its president, they also say the ANC is a party in crisis. I do think that there is one issue we should keep in mind. I mean, the ANC has been in power for more than 3 decades. That's a long time for any political party to be in power. I mean, after a while, political parties run out of ideas, right? They get exhausted. And that is the reason why, for all its problem, a democratic system actually is quite useful, because you can have a new group of people who have the ambition to come to power. I mean, as to your question whether it is inevitable, I do think that it is in a spiral, in a sense, right? It is in a spiral. And I think part of it is how the ANC is organized itself, that there is just no incentive for those people who lead it perhaps to listen more to what ordinary South Africans have to say. I mean, the only time they have to spend a lot of time thinking about that is during elections. But actually, I mean, if you are a president of the ANC or somebody who aspires to a leadership position in the ANC, the people that you do need to care about are those people who are at the NGC, right? The delegates. Because those are the people who decide who becomes the president, the SG, and all of that. Sometimes you might think the ANC leadership is not listening. It may not be listening to ordinary South Africans, but it is listening to power holders inside the ANC itself. I mean, in regions, I mean, in branches, because those are the people who decide. And so when you
But not the people who elect the party.
Not the people who elect the party, but before the party is elected into government, those who lead it must be elected into positions. And really that is a fundamental reality that we need to keep in mind all the time, that unlike other political parties, because sometimes when I think about the ANC, I do check how have other political parties dealt with the problems that the ANC has. I mean, in other places, I mean, let's take the obvious cases. It is not the best. But I mean, if you look, for instance, in the United States, in order to be elected to be a presidential nominee, we have to go through primaries. I mean, we have to go to ordinary members at the very least of your party, and those are the people who elect you, who vote for you. I mean, even in the United Kingdom, I mean, to take another example, I mean, even though it is the parliamentary party that will nominate you, but you still have to go to ordinary members, I mean, and sell yourself. We do not have anything of that sort, I mean, in the ANC. So it is an insider's game. Once you win an insider game, then you become a powerful person in the ANC. Then you think about ordinary problems that you and I face afterwards. I think it is one of the major problems. I mean, if the ANC talks about renewal, if it was quite serious about it, actually it would have to think quite seriously, how does it embed itself to ordinary South Africans? Because in many respects, even though it talks about all of us here as our people, in many respects, we are not the first people that, if you are an ambitious person inside the ANC, that you have to think about. We have to think about who leads that branch, who leads that region, who leads the province, and that is the political support of the people that you need. And that is part of the primary problem. And I think now what is going on with the electoral decline that you see. So you see this political elite that leads the ANC scrambling, in a sense. It's scrambling. And I think it's just ordinary South Africans who say we have had enough and we are moving away. And it is just difficult to balance the interest of the internal elite inside the ANC and those people who are outside. I mean, the outsiders, which is just the common folk.
Professor Nulunga's proposition is that after a while, political parties run out of ideas. Now, Prof. Poison, you spent some time at the NGC. I'm sure you watched or listened to President Ramaphosa's speech at the dinner. I noticed that he kept going back to the Freedom Charter. So, and I was thinking, what is the ANC's big idea for moving the country forward? The Freedom Charter is like, he spent a lot of time on the Freedom Charter and the history of the ANC and, you know, how the ANC used to be a well-oiled machine, mass-based, etc. But I didn't hear, you know, anything about the big idea to say, okay, how do we take the country forward?
Yes. Well, the purpose of last night's event or the event on Wednesday evening was, of course, the Tuesday evening. Which day?
Tuesday.
Thank you very much. My day is getting mixed up here. Almost as mixed up as the political ideas. But that was very much to celebrate the Freedom Charter. But that brings us exactly to your point. It is such a big opportunity to take forward, to take the country and to take the organization forward, to give a new vision. We have had a lot of visions and plans all over the place that, and often not much has happened to it. But a political leader and a political organization with a future must have a very clear, succinct vision. And if that could have been linked to the Freedom Charter event, to the statements about it, that could have been making such a big impact. But it is indeed as if the ANC is regurgitating the old ideas. If we look at the base discussion documents that serve as a basis for deliberations at the National General Council meeting, there are few new ideas in there. There are very big diagnoses, and sometimes one thinks the diagnoses have been cut and pasted and slightly updated. And because there are refinements, that I think the understanding of the problems that we face and ANC faces, those are quite profound. But yet the solutions are few and far between. The new solutions are really very far, few and far between. Even on Tuesday morning, an opening address that Cyril Ramaphosa delivered at the NGC, much of it was like last year's State of the Nation address, stock taking of what has happened and the typical kind of this base delivery points. But there was no inspirational moment in there. And that one was also very widely broadcast. So it is really as if the ANC, and maybe they should, given the poor state of the organization and the fact that it is so showing so much decay in so much many respects, that they are very internally focused. But it is too much. It is not how a big leading party in a country should be going about.
What is going on inside the ANC, Professor Nulunga? Professor Poison refers to the decay that's happening. What is decay?
I think there are certain things that sometimes we take for granted. I mean, I think the intellectual capital inside the ANC has diminished over time. People who lead political parties, people who lead governments, generally, I think there are two issues. I mean, the first, it seems to me, is that just when you look at the people who lead the ANC right now, less traveled, they do not know much about the world, not perhaps as educated as people, for instance, who led in 1994 or so. I mean, there was something about the experience of exile that perhaps we have not taken account of quite seriously, that these are people who had traveled the world, who knew, who had a sense of what works and what doesn't work. What strikes me about people who lead South Africa, either in the ANC itself, but also in government, I just do not get a sense that these are people who are interested in ideas and what is going on in the world, because that is where you get the new ideas from, right? I think what the ANC has become over the past 30 years, it has become such an insular, small organization, right? And so a person who wins the ANC is somebody who has organizational acumen, who knows how to get support here and there and build a winning coalition, in a sense, is not somebody who inspires people by the ideas that they have. And part of the reason why there is no incentive to have the ideas, I mean, I do not want to mention names because these are people I know, but honestly, when you listen even to leaders of the ANC addressing, there's no like big new idea you hear from there. Not because they do not like ideas. They just do not
have
them. They do not have them. But there is no incentive to go out there and look for ideas. I mean, I think that is one area in which there is definite decay, that the intellectual capital on which the ANC dependent, I mean, leading up to the negotiations in 1994, is gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think the middle class, the academics who were closely aligned with the ANC and supplied it with ideas, those people are no longer with the ANC anymore.
But where did it go? Why did it leave? No. Surely an organization will have a transitional kind of plan, you know?
I think part of it, and I'll speak briefly here, the ANC has lost a lot of, you know, these splits. I mean, if you take, for instance, the first major split, I mean, the COP split, some of the smartest people that the ANC had, we can give names, they left the ANC after the Polokwane thing. Yeah. And there have been waves of people who have been leaving the ANC. We mean the dramatic political splits. But there are people who have left the ANC just quietly because they are disgruntled as individuals. I mean, I think about academics who were closely aligned with the ANC. I mean, if you think leading up to the negotiations, literally every academic, I suspect even Susan, every academic... Yes, every academic, every intellectual was linked to the mass democratic movement and the ANC itself. And the ANC benefited from that. The RDP comes from all of those people. Literally, I can tell you, at the NGC today, if we were to go there and check how many of those people with those historical links are still there, most of them will be there as analysts like Susan is, but not because they are closely aligned with the ANC, they are contributing to its ideas. And that has happened because there is no incentive for those who lead the ANC to tap into a Susan Poisson and many other people there, because that is not how you compete for power in the ANC. It is not through the power of your ideas. It is through your organizational ability inside the political party itself. So that is how, while in other places, you have to have some ideas on how to deal with big problems, and therefore you need to source talent. I mean, that is going to help you generate those ideas.
Yeah, and just if we look now, this reflects in the current it's not being articulated, they're not really allowed to articulate anything about future leadership in the current meeting. That is to come at the elective conference later. But the names obviously are being thrown around. But there's such a paucity of inspiring new leadership. There are a few people who can definitely pull together a cross-provincial delegates alliance to maybe make it into a majority. But the people are looking, and they know what is on the stage at this stage will likely not to be enough. And one gets the idea, even yesterday, there were talk informal talks here and there. Maybe we need a technocrat, and I mentioned a minister with good technocratic experience,
yeah,
who can provide light. And then maybe it's a woman, maybe it's a businessman we need, and maybe it is an experienced woman politician we need. And just so many different possibilities coming up, but none with real gravitas.
But let's just digress a bit and locate the ANC in government as the biggest political actor, even if he doesn't have, you know, an outright majority.
Yeah.
Would you say that its being in the GNU has strengthened it, or has actually put it in a straitjacket?
Oh, it has certainly given it, first place, a big lifeline, so it can stay in power. Yeah. And if the ANC can stay in power, then they are in very shortly in control of the bulk of the executive, of the ministerial cabinet positions, then it is largely their policies that continue being implemented, and they take great pride that is, they found it a way to make that possible. So in that kind of way, they have definitely been strengthened. They have been held
despite
back,
losing their outright majority.
Yes, yes. And we can look at a few of the policies that are being contested by especially the Democratic Alliance, a few of the other smaller partners as well. But those policies are still persisting. They have not been thrown out. They're still being implemented. And so in that way, too, the ANC has been strengthened. And the GNU has softened much of the debates, much of the contests and challenges to the ANC. So the GNU and the inclusion of that particular set of parties have actually made the ANC's life very easy in a coalition government. Yes, they've been taken to court on a few cases. Yes, they have been forced to reconsider how they actually passed the budget. They were pushed into, a month or so ago, convening a very extraordinary Lekgotla-style meeting with their GNU partners, where much more negotiations took place than what the ANC would actually like to negotiate. But life is very easy for the ANC in this coalition. And yeah, I think there's good reason why they didn't choose EFF, for example, because they didn't like the EFF's policy demands, do more this or that, apart from the fact that they really believe the EFF does come with too much corruption baggage. And they definitely were not in line to align with the MKP. But yes, they are criticized. And the GNU status and alliance with the DA in the GNU is one of those internal proxy issues for the ANC. The RET has become DA-GNU. Yeah. But those fights are not so serious. They are contained quite easily. We've seen quite a few NEC, National Executive Committee meetings of the ANC, where Ramaphosa and his associates have found it seemingly quite easy to counter those arguments about who they should be in power with. But overall, the ANC is finding it a very easy ride for a party that hasn't got an outright majority.
And you think it's because of what? Because hypothetically, one would have thought that if you go into a coalition, you're not going to get everything you want.
So I wouldn't say they get everything they want, but they get the bulk of what they want, and they've got probably more than what they can handle. Because we know the ANC and its policies, it's nice to have, and it's on the record, it's been adopted, but they stay on the shelf.
Professor Ngulunga, earlier on, you touched on the question of renewal.
Yeah.
How credible is that narrative? Actually,
In your assessment,
you think what's the term that the economists like to use? Green shoots of renewal?
No, I mean I don't, to be honest with you. I mean I think if you were to ask members of the ANC what it even means, I mean, I don't think they can give you a persuasive answer what renewal means. I mean, especially, I mean, in the main, they will tell you that if somebody has been charged by a court, therefore they must step aside. I think beyond that, I don't think there is much. But I think it's because it is difficult. I mean, if they were, the ANC or the leadership were to engage in renewal in a serious way, that would be a difficult thing to do. Because there are entrenched political interests in the ANC that prevent renewal from taking place, right? I mean, there is an entrenched political elite that benefits from what we consider to be decline. I mean, in the dispensing of patronage, I mean, who gets what position and all of that. Because that is at the heart of the problems that we are dealing with. I mean, I do wonder, I mean, even the names that are mentioned, I mean, if ordinary members of the ANC in a primary system, they were to be involved, I mean, and decide who gets elected, I wonder whether we'll be talking even about the people whose names are bandied about, right? I just don't think so. I think we have also been sucked into thinking within this framework that the ANC has created for ourselves, right? Yeah. Where, oh no, there is this name and all of us jump into talking about these people without asking, I mean, what are their ideas about dealing with South Africa's fundamental problems?
What's the difference between
Paul Mashatile and Cyril Ramaphosa and Fikile Mbalula and Togo Dutiza, who's the latest name? What does she stand for? She has been in politics, I mean, at the highest level of politics for the past 3 decades.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you today what she stands for. I know the positions she has occupied. But we are a society with serious problems. We have people who want to lead not only their political party, but we also want to lead the society, and we do not know what they stand. What does Paul Mashatile stand for? A deputy president of the country. What does he stand for? And the reason why we do not know is because they play an insider's game. That to me, if you are serious about renewing the ANC, you have to smash the insider's game. They have to be exposed to ordinary South Africans. And then we'll know what they stand for. But if we were to say they need to have debates and all of that, they will never. To a man or a woman, not a single one of them will agree to that because they prefer this system. And then you have the corrupting influence of money then. And then you have connections with the criminal underworld because it is a concealed system that we do not know how it works. I think that is the fundamental issue here. And there's only one group of people who will solve it, by the way. Is ordinary South Africans at a ballot box. If they keep on passing the verdict, then things will start changing.
We're talking, Professor Poizen, about the question of ideas, and now we're talking about a possible, I don't know what I should say, it's a looming succession to find a successor to Cyril Ramaphosa. What is his situation right now? You know, because I see that there has been a lot of almost what one might call a whispering campaign to say, well, he's going, he's in the departure lounge, you know, he's not going to be there long, etc. But actually, in the harsh, light of day, he seems to be quite ensconced in the position. He doesn't seem to be like someone who's going to be leaving next week.
No, kind of thing.
So where is this whispering campaign, if you like, coming from? And what is it aimed at doing? Is it really aimed at pushing him out like yesterday? Or is it what is going on there?
There's always, in politics, and given that so many of his enemies, opponents in ANC, have got this beautiful card of GNU that they can mobilize against him, which partner you're going in with, it leaves a lovely opening for people to start positioning themselves. And traditionally, at least on a few previous occasions, ANC, think of Jacob Zuma between 2005, the National General Council meeting then, and in subsequent ones, Kgalema Motlanthe, people were looking out at one stage for Kgalema Motlanthe, at least putting his hat in the ring to make possible succession from Jacob Zuma possible, but and that was at NGC meetings, but that was very meek and mild, and there was some minor formulation about something about the second phase of the two-phase, or the second part of the second phase of the revolution.
Or which comes first. You know?
So it is conventionally in the ANC become a good opportunity for future rising aspiring leaders to start putting up their hands, but they have to show something that they are actually standing for. And this means that Cyril Ramaphosa is actually very safely positioned at this stage. He will almost certainly not be recalled unless another Palapala happens or something like that, but before the elective conference. Once the elective conference happens and a new leader is elected, then we get into the territory where Thabo Mbeki went, where Jacob Zuma went, and that would be the time for him to consider listening to ANC culture and just to step aside at that stage.
In other words, before his term ends, but he...
Before his government term ends, when his party term ends. Mm-hmm. And so that the big thing that they love talking about the ANC is so that there won't be two centers of power. Mm-hmm. Even Gauteng, greater region with the ANC, new leadership leader over the weekend. Yeah. And Dada Marrera still being mayor of Johannesburg, they're even using the argument there shouldn't be two centers of power. So the ANC likes to clear the decks once there is a new leader in an obvious succession position elected. But a mayor of Johannesburg, and maybe, but although that doesn't quite apply to the president of South Africa, but mayor of Johannesburg, isn't a clear successor anymore, because there are good chances that a new alliance could come in, although probably not at this stage. So yes, Cyril Ramaphosa well positioned to stay in power for a while. We know also, because a wonderful thing like leaks that are much more frequent from ANC NEC meetings nowadays, we know that some voices have gone up, some challenges, and Cyril has seemingly addressed and countered the challenges to his leadership. And yes, so he's safe for now. But we know that on a few occasions, like around the Palapala time, Cyril Ramaphosa was at the point of putting his hat, throwing the towel in.
He seems to be a latter day. Who's the writer who said news of my death? I'm hugely exaggerated. So many times people have predicted that he's going, he's finished.
Yeah.
And somehow he's been able to hang in there.
People like William Montage have really protected him around the Palapala time. Mm-hmm. And on other cases, he's been close shaving court rulings, where technical matters really helped him get off on that question about how his previous campaign was funded. And so he has had a few lucky escapes, I think.
But could we be as a country underrating him as a political survivor? Could it be that we're not crediting him for survival skills that he has, as a politician?
I think he's getting quite a bit of credit for that. He survived quite a few assaults, and he's countering the GNU critiques quite consistently, playing the cards and playing the renewal cards very clearly, as if the fact that the ANC has slipped to below 50% has not happened under his rule. That was one that we've totally overlooked, and how he's really made coalition and GNU coalition as if this is a great achievement.
which was planned all along to unite the country.
Yes.
Yeah. But I don't know, probably if I could say something about... I think he has always been underestimated in a sense. He is a lot more skillful politician than sometimes we give him credit for. I think Zuma at some point controlled the ANC. I mean, and just for him to win in 2017 was not a small
achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was not a small achievement. But I also think he is a beneficiary of the ANC, that it is a much smaller tent than was the case. In the same way, in the case of Jacob Zuma, he was a beneficiary of that too, that he inherited an organization that was a lot less diverse than had been the case. I mean, the so-called Mbeki people had left to establish COPE.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Right? So there was no strong internal opposition for quite a while. And I think in the case of the current president of the ANC, I mean, the fact that the Julius Malemas are not inside the ANC, Jacob Zuma is not inside the ANC. I mean, so the ANC is a lot more cohesive, actually. Smaller, but cohesive. I mean, so there are no the internal dissent. I mean, even though you hear this or that, but I think he's a beneficiary for that. But the biggest reason, in my view, is that it is just not in the interest of the contenders, those who want to succeed him, to see him leave right now. I don't think that we have somebody powerful enough to cobble together a coalition that could make that person
an internal ANC
coalition. I mean, you can see how they are positioning themselves around him. I mean, Balula, I mean, who's closely aligning himself to the president, right? I mean, in a sense that if I'm elected, I mean, I will be a continuity candidate, so to speak. I mean, I do not know in the case of Paul, I mean, you do not know where he stands in relation to his boss right now. So I just think when the political elite thinks, they just do not know if he goes now, then what? They are not sure that they will be able to do that. But I think his fate actually will be determined by what happens at the next local government elections.
Mm-hmm.
Zuma started losing power in the ANC after that local government election
2016.
In 2016.
Big shift.
All along, he was a Teflon president. It was like, we'll keep him because he wins us votes. Up until he started losing votes.
Yeah.
And remember, because when you lose the votes, there are people who lose jobs. It's not just, there are powerful people who lose jobs. And I think
All the political beneficiaries.
I mean, I think if next year's local government elections really become bad for the ANC.
And the infighting is going to be so much
fighting,
fiercer
it will be
because
so
the pool of available positions is going to be so much smaller.
And I think they will start then at that moment if it's so bad. Because they are keeping him because they think he's making us not to lose as badly as we think we should be. But if the ANC really gets a bloody nose at the next local government elections, I think his position will start becoming untenable.
And it's going to be interesting how the SACP's likely withdrawal from the tripartite alliance is going to affect them further. Because I think they might become not a big winner in elections, but I think they could take away a significant number of votes from the ANC at a time where more people in ANC are looking for alternatives and are very often available, interested to vote for small parties, even if it's ridiculously small and insignificant parties without any coherence. But people are looking for alternatives so as to not to vote for the ANC again. And in conditions like that, SACP could make quite a big difference to the ANC's result.
Professor Ngulunga, do you think the SACP could become, as Professor Poison is saying, a factor if they broke away? In other words, could they make the ANC's life more difficult? Some people write them off, you know, to say, well, in fact, they're dependent on the ANC for their, you know, Gwetemantashe, I think, said that...
he says suicide.
Yeah, he says they're committing suicide.
He said,
they're leaving us, they're committing suicide.
So they are committing suicide. Look, I mean, in the by-elections where they have participated, they have not done well. But, I mean, it's too early in the day. I mean, because in by-elections specifically, sometimes it just depends who's known in that ward. But they have performed quite badly in the by-elections. But I understand why they want to do it, actually, because our electoral system actually rewards even small parties. Sometimes we just need to have one seat in the municipality and you decide who becomes the mayor.
You become a mayor yourself.
But I also think the decision by the SACP is to try to increase its leverage inside the alliance itself. That we are getting ignored all the time.
Yeah.
And that perhaps if we had electoral power, then we could start being listened to. But I honestly do not know. I mean, they will definitely take votes away from the ANC, there is no doubt. I mean, because they are competing for the same base, I mean, political base, electoral base. How significant that will be, I do not know. But I think it will be decisive after the elections. I mean, where the SACP, given even a seat or two, it can decide who becomes a mayor. And
just undermine those majorities that the ANC will be getting.
Getting,
yeah. Yes. And that is another part of the slippery slope.
Mm.
A few years ago, when the SACP did stand in council-wide by-elections in the in Sasselburg area,
yes,
there they actually did win quite a few seats.
That's true.
Which probably gave them ideas. You know,
that was in a time of Zuma and...
Yeah.
Mm. Big internal.
Or the circumstances were different then.
And they could capitalize on that.
Yeah. But I wanted us to go back slightly to the whole question of succession in the ANC. How does it happen that an organization as old as the ANC that has been in power for so long struggles with succession, you know, or rather in producing good quality leadership that it can easily choose from, you know, should one of the leaders leave, because leaders have to leave at some point. No leader stays forever.
Yes. Well, I think it is older generation of leaders and those ones who come with the liberation movement credentials. It's slowly been phasing out, but it's really made a big difference, you know, that older generation of revered leaders hanging on and being returned to power to such a large extent. And so many of the upcoming and new ones have been found with hands in a cookie jar. And we can see the MKP, the large proportion of their public representatives who have had at least allegations, not always convictions, but at least allegations against them. And think of Zweli Mkhize at one stage seen as the top leading contender. He could probably have been placed very well had he not been facing his own problems. And so many of those leaders have just been found with unsavory baggage.
Mm.
And that,
could the factor, could the factor also be political? One of, you know, the I think earlier we were talking about the quality of, for example, political education in the party or how they select membership, we said earlier that a lot of good people have left.
Yeah.
So how do they replace the good people who leave?
Yeah, they have not been playing that succession wheel sufficiently. Because they've been hanging on so much, they have not been stepping aside sufficiently to make space. Yes, they have brought in more women, put at least in overall percentages, and in NEC, for example, the way it is elected. But very often, leaders have fallen by the wayside, and some male leaders have, I believe, have fallen by the wayside. But younger generation, at one stage, even about a decade ago, we saw so many 30-something, 40-year-old leaders, men and women, who were ready to come in. But they didn't enter because that was probably one of the reasons. It was the time the corruption scandals and state capture scandals in the ANC really started ruling and overruling so many of the other considerations. So Yes, no, succession planning and transitional of leadership has not happened sufficiently. And of course, the fact that the EFF had left was a big factor. There was would have been much more generational rise within the ANC if those people had been coming in.
It is difficult for talented people, to rise up in the ANC. It's just difficult. I mean, it's because of how the system works. I mean, it is not... if you think most people who tend to rise up to higher positions are people who know how to work the organizational machine. It is not for... usually a person who's the secretary, you know that person will become the chairperson. And there's a reason why that is the case. It's because those are people who control the membership. Those are the people who will go and say, this branch meets the requirements and this one doesn't. I mean, we disqualify this one or we do not disqualify that one. And so there is an organizational politics that exists there that rewards certain kinds of people. I mean, basically, because it means to thrive inside the system, you need to invest a lot of your time in knowing the intricacies of how the organization works. I mean, how do you get ordinary members to vote for you and all of it? And to sit, I mean, I don't know whether you have been to a branch meeting. Sometimes it will be said it is at 12 o'clock noon and then it starts at 7. In the
7 p.m.
How many people? Yeah. I mean, how many people who have jobs, I mean, have the stamina to sit there and wait for those number of hours so that you can participate in a branch meeting? So there are many things inside, I think, that discourage. But maybe also just, Pramaik, if you look at political elites in other places, I mean, they rise through certain institutions. It could be either certain schools or certain universities. But in South Africa, what is remarkable about our political elite, you do not know where these people come from. I mean, one distinguishing thing about them is that they've risen through the ranks of a party. But outside of a party, there are no institutions, in a sense, that develop their leadership capabilities. I mean, okay, let's go in the United States. I mean, most of their politicians will have gone through law school, for instance. I mean, in the United Kingdom, they will have gone to their elite institutions, some quite exclusionary institutions like Eton. Yeah, then, you know, they will go and do PPE at Oxford or go to Cambridge. But there are these institutions that make a political leadership. If you go to China, for instance, most of the people who lead China today are engineers who have gone to the top schools in China and they go through particular institutions. One of the major gaps, at least from where I stand, is that we have a political elite that does not get socialized in how to lead, that does not go through particular institutions that teach you like just the discipline of leadership. Because if you are a leader, there are all sorts of temptations that come your way. Like the discipline of leadership. Those are the things that you acquire when you go through these institutions. And unfortunately, in our case, suddenly you just get to know about some name of some provincial baron after a conference. And suddenly all of us now are talking about, but you say, who's this person? Where do they come from? Where have they risen? Which institutions have they gone through? And
the other thing that I wanted us to talk about is the future of the party itself as a political party. You know, you have studied a lot of its history, its ups and downs throughout. You know, and I think you mentioned previously, you know, in our conversation that it has had quite a number of near-death experiences, where it looked like it was finished, it was gone. And then it somehow managed to come back. Could the people who are talking about renewal now be thinking like that, to say, you know, this is probably just a hump in the road, you know, we'll be fine. You know, we always come. We're the comeback kids of South African politics.
I think there are two options. I mean, I've thought about this quite a long time. One is the UNIP option, Taunda's political party, when it lost power, it died. And organizations, political parties are organizations, sometimes they do die. Because I think one of the core things that hold the ANC together is that it is in power, actually. And so one of the interesting questions is what happens to the ANC when the power goes away? Does it remain? Who will remain inside the ANC when the power is gone? And why will they remain inside the ANC? Because what holds it together is no longer ideas anymore. So it's fundamentally its power. Is power and what power brings to those who hold it. So that is one thing. I mean, in the case of UNIP, I mean, in Zambia, when the power went, I mean, the organization died. I mean, the other option actually is the Indian Congress option. And I have a feeling that the ANC is going towards that direction. The Indian Congress was a powerful political party, a dominant political party in India for decades. And it started losing power and it splintered. And so in Indian politics, actually, it is a small party. It forms coalitions with like-minded political parties. I suspect, partly because of our electoral system, that we are not going to have a strong dominant party in South Africa. The ANC will be one of those.
You mean going forward?
Going forward. It might be 25%. With the high mark of 30% political party, I think that needs coalitions with the SACPs and other like-minded political parties to constitute a government. And then you might have other political parties that are not big, no dominant party. So I suspect that actually is likely to be the way it goes, that it will be a 20-30% political party over time that requires the coalitions to form government if it can. That is just looking forward. I mean, I suspect that is the direction it is likely to take.
And right now, you'd say it's not terminal, Professor Boysen?
It's not terminal yet.
Is it on its deathbed yet or well, far
it's
from
pretty,
the deathbed?
It's in need of serious medical attention, if you ask me. But I wouldn't say it is quite dying yet.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for a political party to actually die.
Yeah.
Don't we all remember the old National Party?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just didn't want to die.
As slowly, if it
there might still might even still be a little one somewhere.
Yeah.
ANC, certainly, I think it can still remain the biggest party in South Africa for quite a while.
How big, though, Susanna?
It is 30-40%, towards 40. In the 30s, it could still remain there. And then it could still remain the lead party in a coalition government. But who it associates with is going to affect it over time, whether it goes more in the middle of the road direction, where it actually is.
Yeah.
It's actually very happy in bed with the DA.
That's true.
There's a lot of convergence in their That's policies, true. Despite all the radical revolution.
The outbursts from Helen Zille.
Despite the best things about the National Democratic Revolution, they're actually very comfortable in that coalition.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
one day we're going to have a special podcast about the NDR. To unpack it and try to understand it. You know?
Yes, and see that, it is actually more than a foundation course that ANC representatives and delegates have
got. But it's not dying, as we speak now.
No, we can see it in by-election results.
So it is.
It's competing strongly
and
sees a few here and there, but it is still standing.
Okay. And lastly then, while we're talking about what's going to happen to the party tomorrow and beyond, the forthcoming local elections, what do you think is going to, we touched on them in passing. Do you think that they will dip even further than where they are now? Professor Boysens, before we go to Professor Ngodum.
Yes, I certainly think they're going to dip further. Well, also, if we look at by-election trends, they're not always definitive, but they are often very good indicators of broad directions. And we see the ANC ceding more seats than other parties.
And in public opinion polls, those ones that aren't a few and far between reliable ones that are also available regularly, we see the ANC is slightly improving from its low point post-election, but it's not reaching its election 40% again. And when it just touches it, and whereas other parties like the DA, even the IFP of a small base, Patriotic Alliance of a small base, are growing slightly. And those are very good indications for the local government elections in just under a year's time. And so that is that we will expect more coalition governments. We will not expect the big metros to revert back to ANC majority rules, as ones that had been in the past. And so it is firmer accumulation. Other results that we've seen, I see 2016 is being emphasized now as a big turning point. The ANC started losing support. Those graphs run and a bit on a jagged curve, but they run systematically from 2004. And that trend will continue.
Professor Ngunungwa, what do you think is going to happen?
With the local government elections?
Yeah.
I think the ANC is going to do badly.
What's driving that? Is it its own internal weakness issues? Is it bad PR?
I think if you look, for instance, at Johannesburg, it's been extraordinary. What has happened in this
service
city
delivery
is just
evaporated.
It is just extraordinary. I mean, I think it's gonna have a hard time in Johannesburg. I expect it to lose eThekwini. MKP, and also there because of service delivery thing. If you ask me to give a number, I would say 35% overall.
Yeah.
I would say about 35% or so overall. And of course, I mean, as you go back to the political question that you raise, is that these things are not just numbers. There are people who have access to resources, jobs, and all of that who suddenly wake up the following day and those things are gone. And what happens to those people? What do they do? I mean, these are people, powerful people inside the ANC who have support, who will be deciding what will happen at the elective conference. But I just think, just on its record at local government, the ANC tends to do well at national level than at local government level, right? I mean, its brand carries it through at a national level. But local government, it's pretty tough. I think it's going to have a hard time. And I think after that, the leadership of the ANC is going to have a hard time holding to its positions.
So if we're predicting the coalition scenario to continue, Helen Zille mayorship for Joburg is not out of bounds, out of the realm of possibility?
No, it isn't, but she would also need a coalition. DA is not going to make it on their own. So it's still coalitions there. But it would put it, she would probably get into a better, stronger position than the DA is now.
Yeah.
Getting closer, because the DA currently finds it impossible in a city like metro like Joburg to get the outright majority, just not enough without the EFF as a bargaining chip for their block of votes coming in. It's very difficult in these places to make a majority now. Of course, if the EFF crumbles further, EFF has been going down, not dramatically, but they've not been growing. If they disintegrate, fall further into disrepair, it's going to have a very big effect on who makes that bargaining chip, bargaining block, the king, who will be the king or queen makers.
Do you like that with the ANC? I think we might see a DA ANC coalition in Johannesburg. With Helen Zille as the mayor.
And local government, we know by now, local government, any coalition works. Anybody works with anybody as long as those numbers add up to 50%. And there are even places where the DA and the EFF are in happy coalition together at local level.
Okay. I think let's wrap it up there before we run out of time. And I'd like to thank my guests, Professors Ngulunga and Boysen, for joining us to look at the state of probably, even though it's in decline, as we were saying, it is still a major factor in South African politics. My name is Mike Siluma. Until next week, stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.